Down in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, in Hollywood, where I drive through, there's a big sign up on a building. It says, anti-aging news. I wonder, what the heck is that? And there was a telephone number. So I called him up and I said, send me the anti-aging news. And you know what it's all about? What?
I said, Fountain of Youth.
Fountain of Youth, yeah. Well, they sell you all kinds of stuff, you know, to get rid of the wrinkles and this thing here, keep in shape, so you can hear better, things of that nature. It's all full of things which keep you from aging, but that's not the answer. We're talking about sensory deprivation and communication. We're going to define it for you, we hope. Provide some information on the effects of age-related sensory deprivation. We're able to recognize what it is in the elderly and to define communication, to improve communication between family members and aged parents by providing practical techniques which encourage open communication. Did you ever play that game where you send messages, you know, as kids, you start out at one end of the room and you say something to the next person and you get to the end of their line and they repeat, and it's much different than what it first started out. That's some of the difficulty in communicating. Physical changes occur with age in all the five senses, in vision and hearing, taste, touch, and smell. And these changes, like all age-related changes, have a profound effect upon a person's ability to remain independent and to function adequately within his or her physical and social environment. A very important part of our ability to function in our environment is our ability to communicate. For communication is a very complex transaction and is defined for our purposes as the sending and the receiving of messages. We have a number of verbal and nonverbal ways to communicate. By talking, writing, by our facial expressions, body gestures, and even by our silence. Here's some hints for improved communication. Really listen. You know, most times people don't listen to the other person.
Especially if they're old.
Right. Pay attention to what you're hearing and to their body gestures. Repeat using different words. Sometimes older people don't understand what you're saying. So if you have any difficulty hearing what I have to say, just raise your hand and I'll try to repeat it in another word. Speak distinctly. Be at the level where they can see you and your face and your mouth. You know, when you go into a hospital room, pastors usually go in along with the doctors and the nurses and so forth and stand over the person who's lying in bed there. They don't get down to the level of the person. I usually like to take a chair and bring it in and set it down next to the bed, to be on the same level so that they don't have to look up. Take your time, one thought at a time. Acknowledge the feelings that the person has. And don't suppress them. You know, in hospice care, when I was working there, many people used to tell us that people don't like to talk about dying, death. But many people, after you gain their confidence and they've been able to trust you and you have a relationship with them, they like to talk about these things because they're thinking about it. And they like to express themselves. The use of nonverbal cues, such as their body language, their eyes, their hands, their gestures. And the tone of voice is very important. And touch, perhaps, is the most important thing of all. We used to have little stickers that we used saying that you're entitled to a free hug today. And even if you just touch someone, you know, on the shoulder, you don't have to hug them. But touch is a very important thing. It means you're in communication with them and you care. You don't always have to have conversation back and forth. You can listen in silence. There's a ministry of presence that we have, of just being there, holding their hand, letting them know that you care. And then you often have to look for hidden meanings. What they may first say may not be what they really mean. And there may be something underneath of what they're expressing, which may be an indication of their need. And finally, encourage reassurance. Let me share with you something here from Socrates. Socrates is discussing with how do you pronounce it? C-E-P-H-A-L-U-S. Kephalus? It must be some Greek word. I can't understand. It's in the dialogues with Plato. And Socrates states that for him, conversing with the aged is an educational experience in which younger men can learn of things that might lie ahead in life. He says, "There is nothing I like better than conversing with aged men, for I regard them as travelers who have gone a journey which I too may have to go, and of whom I ought to inquire whether that way is smooth and easy or rugged and difficult. And this is a question I should like to ask of you, who have arrived at that time when the poet calls the threshold of age, old age. Is life harder toward the end, or what report do you give it? I will tell you, Socrates," the man replies, "what my feeling is. Men of my age flock together. They are birds of a feather. As the old proverb says, at our meetings the tale of my acquaintances commonly is, I cannot hear, I cannot drink. The pleasures of youth and love are fled away. There was a good time once, but now it's gone, and life no longer is life." Do you think that's accurate? You're shaking your head. Does it apply only to men? An objective listener may be able to pick up on a relatively minor detail which will help the elderly person come to some sort of resolution. We do this through improved communication, through what we call reminiscence. Who knows what reminiscence is all about? What is it?
Remembering, going back.
Dr. Butler, who headed the Institute on Aging at Bethesda, was the one who started out with this idea of life review. and Reminiscence was picked up as one of the programs of AARP. And I was a trainer in it for a number of years when it was under our interreligious liaison office, but now it's a separate setup within AARP. We used to train people to go out and become friendly visitors and to use the Reminiscence life review process, in which they look back and discuss things in their youth. One of the little games we used to play was to shut your eyes, which I'm going to ask you all to do. Shut your eyes and think back in the age of which you may have been around 12 or 13. And think of your house that you lived in. And think of the room which was yours, where you slept, did your homework, had your little possessions. Is that easily brought back into your remembrance? Many older people find it easier to remember those kind of things than things which had happened just recently. That's why in some of the places, like where Howard worked, they had to put up a sign saying, "This is Tuesday, September the 6th, 1988. Right?
Orientation.
Right. And if you asked them what happened yesterday, they didn't always know.
It wasn't only for the residents either.
Oh. So sometimes our senses, you know, have a way of fooling us. How many have used this idea of reminiscence in their lifetime? Tell us about it.
Okay, I've been working at the nursing home now for 10 years, and this happened the first December that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I had just sat down with a cup of coffee, and this was about 9:05, and the gentleman who was sort of our caretaker at that time was also sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it, I must say that it was just starting to snow.
Mm.
And in Minnesota, you know, we'll know what that means. It could develop into 3 and 4 inches. But anyway, I put my leg on his. Now this maybe sounds silly, but that was the type of fellow and relationship that we had and still have with all our residents there. He just loved the touch, as you have up
right
there. All right, okay, I straightened out again and I said, "Ed, tell me something about your winters past." You know, I almost forgot to go home that night.
Mm.
It was that interesting. Mm-hmm. Because he had come from South Dakota, had been a hired man in the local area there at Buffalo Lake, and now had no home because the farm that he was working at had been a mink ranch and the minks were no longer in existence. So the touch and the fellowship there of remembering really brought me right down to earth. And enjoyed.
Right. Did he communicate very much before that?
No, not really. Unless you went right, he was a quiet type of fellow.
Yeah.
Had no family.
Mm-hmm.
So now this opened a whole can of worms for me and for him.
Right. Good.
And I guess in addition to that, I wish what they would do in nursing homes with four people like of that nature, somebody just come into the room and have this communication with them.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, just to get up and wait for breakfast, go back in the room and sit and wait for dinner. How monotonous.
Right.
And If this were compiled in a book just for that particular reading area, would that be interesting for everybody else?
Yes, well, you'd know what to talk about, too. I know I worked in our nursing home for 20 years. That is just on Tuesday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to make a booklet of telling about the lives of the people. You know, because we did, sometimes so many of them died, you didn't know what they had done during their lives. You know, they were very important people.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the parents, or I mean the children of these people that are up there, objected, so we had to drop.
Oh my.
Really?
They didn't want to.
Mm-hmm. That's sad.
Where I worked, they had a system every summer, twice during the summer, they would have the antique car club bring about 6 or 8 miles over there, and they'd park them in the retainer of the parking lot, and the people would come out during the day, and that really brought up the memories about the rumble seat and all that.
Oh, that's
neat. Mm-hmm. In our training of reminiscence volunteers, we asked them to take one person and be a friendly visitor to them, and go out once a week, either in a nursing home or in a situation where they were living by themselves in their own homes or apartments, and continue this for at least 6 months, and then come back and share their experiences together. The Stevens Ministry is also something that deals with this, as well as other friendly visitor training programs. Who else?
Go back to the reminiscing for
right.
just a moment. This nursing home that I'm speaking in was so prone to medicate people if they became a little bit loud or a little, you know, out of hand.
And mm-hmm.
I usually visit the nursing homes. I bring slides, and this is one of the things that I take, you know, reminiscing things, old schoolhouses and this kind of thing. But anyway, this friend of the family, Carl, was 97, and he began getting so belligerent at bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sedating him so that it worried me. So I talked with his family and asked if they minded if I just came in to visit with him and see what was wrong. And so I went in before the evening sedations.
Mm.
Carl was starting to get a little restless, and we talked, and he knew who I was, you know, and we visited, and the calves were out. The calves weren't in the barn, so he couldn't go to bed.
Mm.
And we put the calves in that night, and I told the girls, I don't think he's going to need the sedation. You watch. After that night, they never had to sedate him, but we put the calves in the night.
Good.
And I think that you can listen for the hidden
That's
things,
right.
you know. But to them it was ranting and raving, mm. and he was so, they called it belligerent. I knew he wasn't that kind of a person, although
yeah.
there are times
right.
that, you know.
You see, that's the trouble, that our paraprofessionals really don't understand what their job is. And one thing that we did in Fort Lauderdale, we have this interfaith coalition on caregiving, and we put on a training course in connection with our vocational technical schools for the paraprofessionals, for the aides, for the people that work in nursing homes and so forth, to give them some idea as to ethnicity, the difference, you know, between going into a Christian home and a Jewish home and Catholic home and so forth. And things of this nature, how to deal with older people, yes.
I think one of the big problems is that the aides and the people that are administering this drug to them do not have the time to come
yeah.
in and sit down and listen
sure.
to you tell a story.
Right.
I mean, so that's right. why you need some volunteers that can mm-hmm. do that. No, they
right.
don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Reminiscence, it says here, is a way of reliving, re-experiencing, or savoring events of the past that are personally significant. Like putting out the
dance.
Right. Reminiscence gives the older person a means to maintain self-esteem and reinforce a sense of identity, to feel a sense of achievement and pleasure, to cope with stresses related to the aging process.
to gain status by revealing selected elements of his or her life history. Place both positive and negative aspects of the past in perspective. To deal with emotions such as grief, and to establish common ground for communication. It helps the open and interested recipient to gain knowledge and understand about the older person and the period in which he or she has lived. To build a bridge between past experiences and the present. To establish a mutually satisfying relationship through the sharing of information and experiences. To use a person's history as a therapeutic tool in building, programming, and establishing resources for others. And by having a context for gaining cues about the person's behavior in the present. This came from the Institute of Gerontology at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I'm going to give you a little test on sensory deprivation. All right? This is a true or false test. You don't have a pencil.
No,
we
didn't bring our pencil.
Oh,
dear. Didn't think you were going to take up the collection.
Outside, Howard, over there by the
have
by the
we
back.
Have
some pencils.
Okay.
We're okay.
You got it?
We're going to be okay.
All right.
We got three more here.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, there.
Okay. Good.
Right. One more over here. All right.
Yeah, you can use this too.
Here's one.
Okay. Okay, physical changes occur with age in all five senses. Vision, touch, hearing, taste, and smell. True or false?
True.
We use our senses to select and interpret clues from our environment.
True.
It is important to remember that sensory change, like all physical change, takes place over a short period of time.
False.
It's a long, long trail of winding into the land of my dreams. Sensory changes progress at different rates in different people. If one lives long enough, he or she will have become a Presbyterian, I thought it said. Hearing loss. Right?
Not necessarily.
I think that's false.
That's false.
Okay. Hearing is your last sense that leaves you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm thinking about
it. Wait till we get down to the bottom there. You'll find out.
Okay.
Cataracts and glaucoma are normal age-related changes.
No.
No?
No.
You know, in our nutrition program in Broward County, the people that would come to our congregate sites would have a glaucoma test available to them as part of the services we rendered.
I think it's true.
Right?
Well, then it would be true.
Well?
Yeah. Are you saying then that cataracts and glaucoma are due partially to malnutrition?
Could be.
But everyone doesn't get glaucoma.
No.
No, but it is an age-related.
They are age-related.
It's age-related, but then normal is the word I'm looking at.
Yeah.
That word normal wouldn't be in there, then give it a different answer.
Well, it says the answers are found on page 219, but I didn't bring it. I didn't bring the right book with me. It's back home. A hearing loss more than any other physical loss will have the greatest effect on a person's ability to relate to others.
True.
My brother would never use his hearing aid. And he would sit in front of the television and watch it without any sound because he wouldn't tone up his hearing aid. Younger people failing to recognize visual and hearing losses may feel that the elderly person is avoiding them or that they are cantankerous, fickle, senile, or just doesn't want to listen. Older individuals do not deny that changes have taken place in their hearing and sight. Taste is the first sense to decrease.
Forget what it tastes like.
Yeah. Right. See? He's got the answer.
Is it true?
Is it true?
I think it is.
You think it's true?
Right. Men are the only persons who have a decrease in color blindness when they become old.
Can't see blondes anymore.
Is that true?
The decrease in color blindness, that means they
get
see
better
more color.
Yeah.
Does that
mean they get their color
saying
Howard?
She's asking a question.
What was that question?
Does that mean that men who have colorblindness get their color sight back?
Decrease in color blindness.
When they become old, they have a decrease in their color blindness.
They do?
That's what it says.
Is that true?
Men are the only persons.
Yeah, true or false?
Is that true?
Do women have that?
They don't have color blindness.
Women don't have color blindness?
Not very, very so. Not true so. Color blindness.
Very so.
I'll have to look up the answer when I get home.
Send us a letter.
I'll send them.
We won't know the answer.
That'll be in the next issue of the magazine.
Right.
Women, on the other hand, have a decrease in hearing before the male.
Absolutely true.
No, just think so.
My wife says, I don't understand what you're saying.
That's
see?
Right. I think men have.
No. It's women that have.
Women
yeah.
Have a decrease before the male?
Sure.
Oh, my goodness. That's true. Is that true or is that a sexist remark?
That's a sexist remark.
Can't just pretend
the answer.
Yeah.
Sure.
He doesn't
do you think it's true?
I mean, sense of that's true.
Of course.
That was true?
Of course it's true.
The last
true?
One.
The last
now,
are
the
you
last
just
one.
Being...
are you being facetious?
No, I don't need facetious.
Well, then
what
about
the
colorblindness?
Sure.
You say that's
true? What about the colorblindness? He's got to look that one up. He knows the answer to the last one.
Oh, yeah.
I know that. How many got 100%? You all did, huh? Okay. Here are some suggestions for dealing with blind persons. There should not be two standards of conduct, one for the blind and one for the sighted. The blind must obey all the rules and perform all tasks within their abilities. He should not be excused from his mistakes because he is blind, but he should be shown his mistakes and helped to correct them. To get talking about names, it's important in some cultures to address someone the correct way. Some blacks, for instance, don't like you to call them by their first name or by boy or lady or so forth. Use their full name. How many have seen a film called Peach? You know what it's about? What?
Well, it's about dealing with people that have lost a lot of their senses. The grandma could no longer understand or hear.
Right.
What's the name? Reaction of
Peach, P-E-E-G-E.
Yeah. Okay. The reaction of the different family members to her.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It deals with reminiscence as well as... Mm-hmm. Communication and so forth.
Very touching.
Very touching. Right. Give directions left or right where they must be in relationship to the person's body and not yours. In giving directions, be specific when giving directions. Don't describe something as being over there, but rather on the first table to your right.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any rules that are different for blind people than sighted people? Any laws I only know of one.
What?
That is a law that a blind person cannot sit in front of an exit on an airline, on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And the people that are promoting, supporting people who are blind, they're trying to change that. Yeah. There have even been some demonstrations. Mm-hmm. That's the only law I really know of.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that is
yeah.
Allowed into places where animals are not.
Yeah. Okay. Let him become familiar with the environment and perform his share of responsibilities independently. When handing him something, touch it to his hand so that he knows it is there. And remember that loud and continuing noises are distracting and interfere with a blind person's orientation. Talk as you write things so the blind person can follow what you are writing. How can he see what you're writing?
What?
It says talk as you write things so the blind person can follow what you are writing.
You also tend to talk louder to a blind person than to other people.
Yes. They're not hard of hearing, they just can't see.
Well, they'll tell you, and their hearing is, well, I can't see, but I can hear.
And their hearing is very much improved very over what other people's are.
Very sensitive.
Right. Do not avoid using words such as look and see when talking to him. It says, do not avoid using words. Help his colleagues to learn his name and to use it. Do not refer to him as, quote, the blind man. And your voice tells him about you. The tone of your voice is important as it tells him whether you're smiling or stern. In social contacts, you or your colleagues need to speak first as your voice tells him who you are and that you are there. If you move some major pieces of equipment, tell him so that you can adjust to those, he can adjust to those changes. And do not move any of his equipment without telling him where it is.
I think that means to, when you say major pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
I would eliminate the word major from there.
All equipment?
All.
A wastebasket may not be a major piece of equipment.
Yeah.
But it can sure be an obstacle to a blind person.
Right. If a locker is needed, assign him one at the end of a row so that he can find it easily. And discourage his colleagues from pampering him. He is safer when taught to move independently and happier when carrying his share of the responsibility. We had one of our nutrition sites in the Center for the Blind in Fort Lauderdale. And you'd be surprised how much went on there with volunteers who were sighted working with these blind people who really had a grand time together. But you need to be helped in this situation to learn how to deal with people who are blind. Anybody else have any suggestions?
I guess what hurts me in dealing with the two blind ladies that we have in the nursing home, some of the gals will come with their dinner plate and they'll set it down in front of them. Your potatoes are at 2 o'clock. Mm. Your meat is at 9 o'clock. They've been blind all their life. They don't know what the clock looks like. And no one has taught them. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's right, but I don't know the solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can make a clock, with the raised letters, numerals, and the hands, mm-hmm. and so forth.
I was at a nursing home recently, and the lady talked about a clock. She had a clock that she would just touch, and it would tell her the time. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really great.
You mean it had a vocal voice?
Yeah. It would tell her, speak to her. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are available now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that the comment about using the word blind or seeing or looking, I think that's true. I had in college had a friend who was blind, and she'd joke about it and felt more comfortable if you were could say I'm a great blind date.
Yeah.
You know, she wanted you to be comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
Right, there are many blind people who are outstanding in what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
How about communicating with the doctor? Is there any problem there?
Yes.
One way?
Absolutely.
What to bring to the doctor? Many times, once in the office, important information is forgotten, avoided or not requested, or there doesn't seem to be enough time. Encourage and assist the older persons to write out the following information. See, this is all part of a course which is given to caregivers and to people who train caregivers and help them in their situation. First of all, it says list all the symptoms that may have been experienced and state their duration and frequency. Secondly, list any recent, in the past 2 or 3 years, or significant illnesses or operations. Third, list any allergic reactions and sources. And fourth, list all drugs that are being used, both prescriptions and over-the-counter drugs. Include aspirin, laxatives, sedatives, etc. And five, if applicable, list other physicians who are providing treatment, what they are treating and how, and list any questions that you would really like to ask the physician. Then it says what to take from the doctor. Information about what the problem appears to be. A description is more important than a name. Sometimes even in the sessions that we used to have once a week when we talked about our patients, a patient care conference as we called it, the nurses and the doctor, our medical director, would talk about things which I didn't know what they were because they used terminology which I wasn't familiar with. List any medications that should be taken, an explanation of why and what effect they should have. Information about when to take the medicine, how much and how long. You know what tritate means? Do we have any nurses here? What is tritate? Tritate.
Tritate?
Is that the correct terminology?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
Well, you know, with people who have a terminal disease such as cancer and so forth, we try to make them pain-free. And there are certain drugs which are prescribed to them. And if the doctor prescribes giving it, say, every 2 hours, or twice a day, or something of that nature, that's a prescription that he writes out. But some of these things can be tritated, I believe. If I'm using the correct terminology, it means the dosage can be increased at a level like instead of every 2 hours, every hour.
Well, in hospice care, they have different rules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the doctor still has to write out the order, but allow things to be done differently.
Right. If their pain increases to a point where they can't, you know, stand it, then the nurse has the ability to tritate and increase the dosage. Okay?
Well, and I was reading a book one day that said a lot of older people ought to take a tape recorder when they visit with their doctor.
Yeah.
And go home and play it back and then call him up and give clarification of all these terms that he's used during the time of the meeting. And that's not only for old people, it's some young people too.
Yeah.
There were articles and papers not too long ago that a person who takes a list into the doctor,
mm-hmm.
a written list, is a hypochondriac. And that's some study.
Sure.
And I am aware, because it's a person that I know, mm-hmm.
went in with a list, and they called his wife and asked him if he was a hypochondriac. That is so stupid.
Oh, there are a lot of stupid things going on in this world. I know a friend of mine who had a problem with alcoholism, and he went to this mental health clinic. So they prescribe a sedative. And you know what happens when you mix a sedative with alcohol?
Yeah.
So they don't always know what to do either. Information about the side effects, did we talk about that? Or the interaction effects of combining medications. We showed a film one time at our health conference we put on, in which this doctor had a big jar, you know, these jars that I used to have in drugstores, where when the people would come in and tell them about what drugs they were taking, he'd pour them all into the jar. Because some of these people were taking medications from one doctor and going to another doctor, and one drug was against the other drug and so forth.
I always called it our good pharmacist. Mm-hmm. He's just got a great honor from the state, and I always called him, can I take this with that? And he would tell me yes or no.
And you know, there's a difference between generic drugs and drugs which have a trade name. And sometimes, most times, you know, the generic is a lot less expensive. List any changes in diet or lifestyle. Should medications be taken before a meal or after an alcoholic beverage? Oh, see, it's in there. Or before retiring. And is exercise needed? And then an appointment for a follow-up visit or a phone checkup, not more than 1 week from the visit. For the effects of medication and various dosages are unpredictable with an older patient. A follow-up is very important, for the medicine may be too strong or may have harmful side effects. In our patient care conference, we would discuss these medications that were prescribed for the patients and see what the reaction of the patient was, see whether they needed to be changed.
Why is it a physician will prescribe such a big dosage of a great big expensive bottle of pills, of 100 pills, and they maybe can take two of them and then that goes in the garbage? Why can't they be prescribed in a smaller amount?
Ask them.
I did, and they said, what I give you, you need to take till they're gone.
No.
Unless you, then I don't know what you do because they wouldn't take the pills back. You save them, Lorraine, till you go to the nursing home, and you bring them along with the 10 years old or two. Oh, I'm saying this. Is that what they do? Oh, we have such, oh, so upsetting to me because I have a prescription. Right. And that happens again and again and again.
Okay, here's some helpful hints to use your pharmacist as another resource person to explain more information about drugs and drug combinations. That's what you said, right? And to ask the pharmacist to give regular capped bottles rather than childproof and hard to open bottles.
Oh. Yeah.
My wife says, I can't open this. So I have to turn it to the right place.
What you do is take it next door and have a little kid open it.
Yeah.
Are you telling me I'm a tool? Childproof, right? Make sure the person can afford the medicine. Ask the generic name, see? Which is the same drug without a brand name. Generic drugs cost less. Don't substitute medication with another person's prescription.
Yeah.
Differences in dosages and dosage strengths may be very harmful. If there are any adverse reactions from medication, call the doctor immediately. Don't pretend that you know. Do you have a doctor at your nursing home?
No, just on call.
On call.
Mm-hmm.
What about at the place where you were, Howard?
Well, they have a what they call a medical advisor, a senior doctor that is in charge of all the other doctors. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. We had 256 patients, and they were dealing with about 120 doctors. They try to bring it down, and people have doctors at far distance. They try to recommend doctors who would get down to maybe 15 or 20. And there's also always a problem in a nursing home with the amount of pharmaceuticals. Most people are taking anywhere from 7 to 12 different drugs every day, and they have to get those in the computer. And now, when they get them in the computer well, they can get this cross-conflict between drugs. It'll red flag it right away. That'll help a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any experience in this area?
Well, I think it points up the fact that if, you want to choose your care centers and nursing homes carefully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't lie to your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Right. My daughter is a physician.
Mm-hmm.
She said if people would tell the half truth, it would help her.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't admit.
Don't lie to your doctor.
Many of these things are tried on a basis of, you know, maybe this can help, because they don't always know.
Symptoms.
My wife, this last week and this week, has had a cough, which she's been trying to get rid of. She's gone up to the nurse three times, three different nurses, three different things she was given. She's still coughing. But you have to live through those things, you know. They don't go away overnight. Okay, we were talking today about sensory deprivation. That's a big word. It means losses of our senses. What did we think was the first loss?
Taste.
And what was the other one?
The last one is hearing.
The last one is hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about reminiscence.
Can I ask a question about that? Is
sure.
there any danger with having people living in the past, too much emphasis on that?
Well, this is often brought up when we had our training, and you know, people like to dwell, some of them, about things which happened many years ago.
Well, they won't get into the present. They're always living back there instead of...
Yeah.
And we're talking about people in a wide range of age.
Mm-hmm.
It's different with a person 90 with 170.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, you have to watch out for that.
When Reagan was becoming president, you know, they said, don't you think you're a little old to be president? You're 70. He said, I have to admit, everything does remind me of something.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's still living in the past. He hasn't called.
You're here now.
How'd you know I was a Democrat?
Those of you that are in the nursing homes and are working directly with them, have you ever tried youngsters bringing in the school children?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that give them a lift, too?
And
the
animals.
Intergenerational
aspect,
right.
Babies.
Pets.
And pets, too. Animals.
Animals.
Oh, they like that.
And I didn't quite finish the story of Carl. I mean, this brought up an aspect to me.
Mm-hmm.
We got Carl, after visiting with him, he put the cattle back in every night for quite a while, and then we delegated it to his farmhand, mm-hmm. because he'd moved from the farm.
I see.
And it,
mm-hmm.
you know, then...
Okay,
you
know, I have
but
a question.
He still was... That way...
Yeah.
Was he violent at the time that he was...
Yes, he wanted to get out of bed, he wanted to get out of his room.
That's why the medication was
administered.
Otherwise, lawfully, they could not have given it to him.
No.
That's right.
That's right. He was, you know, just pushing the nurses and trying to get out of
bed. We have to defend ourselves.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, violence is something we need to deal with in older people.
Even though they have their rights and we have ours, but theirs supersedes ours.
Right. That's right. But I think too many times, you know, we just take it for granted. That's part of senility there.
My sister-in-law called me up one morning at 5 o'clock. Said, we got to do something about your brother. He's beating me. They were Christian Scientists. Never took any medication. Tried to help him. They tried through their Christian Science religion. Finally, he had to be Baker Acted. You know what that means?
No.
In Florida, we have a Baker Act, which
takes
says
the rights of their church away from
they have to be put into an institution, which is a hospital, where he was medicated. And he finally ended up in an ACLF, it's an adult congregate living facility. His wife died before he did, because of the situation she went through. They wouldn't take him in a Christian Science so-called nursing home, because he had to be medicated. And he couldn't be alive without medication. Tomorrow we're going to talk about chronic illness and behavioral changes. And then on Thursday, living arrangements and shared decision making. And on Friday, how to find and use community resources. We're changing the time tomorrow to the same time that we have today. We're training with Howard. I was booked in the afternoon, but he can only get his speaker.
4 o'clock, you can hear acid rain.
Right.
Today.
Tomorrow. Today you can hear.
So thank you for coming out today.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you.